Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefer, and this is episode number 251. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. I really appreciate those of you that like, comment, share. It just helps me continue to highlight the great people that we have in the profession. I want to thank our sponsors, specifically VersaPulley for sponsoring this episode. I only partner with companies that I believe in, products that I believe in, and Kirsten and the gang at VersaPulley are phenomenal, phenomenal people. And make a great product. This week I'm joined by Tobias Jacoby. He's the head strength coach for Strong Rock Christian School. He's also the 2017 NHSSCA Strength Coach of the Year. And I got a chance to hang out with him recently in Nebraska. Just a great dude and doing some phenomenal things. So, man, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody.
Thank you for having me on. It's really a privilege.
Man, you've been, I was writing out your bio earlier. I mean, you've been to more schools than I have, which is hard to do. But Eastern Carolina, Charleston Southern, Kent State, Western Carolina, Elon, UNC, Chapel Hill, and Cumberland is a college setting. You're at Strong Rock Christian School. I'm sure there were some other stops in there to kind of get into the field and whatnot. Which stop in that journey was the one that really defined you as a coach? Like, where did you really grow up into the coach that you are today?
Wow, that's a great question. You threw a zinger right off the bat for sure. I think Western Carolina really helped me as a coach. You know, I was 24 years old as a head strength coach at the 1AA school. So that was a lot of responsibility early on in my career. I was very blessed that I had tremendous support from my head football coach and the athletic director there. Tremendous confidence in what I did. I had a great staff. I was very, very lucky. I was able to build a facility. I did a lot of things early on, especially at Western Carolina, that really helped me become the coach I am today. And it's just been such a lucky thing for me, honestly, that I had that opportunity. And I was able to make mistakes early that I learned from, you know, moving forward and down the road. So Western Carolina, and to be honest with you, and I think just like everybody, we are a result or product of the young men and women that we're able to work with. And at Western, I really had a great time, worked with some great, not just athletes, but great human beings, great kids that, you know, 10 plus years, 15 plus years later, I still communicate with and talk to. Whether it's through social media or, you know, the telephone or something like that, where I'm still a part of a lot of their lives.
Yeah, I think I often say that you don't really do this job. You don't really understand it until you sit in the big kid's chair, you know, at the big kid's table. And, you know, being a head strength coach at 24 years old, I mean, I was head strength coach at South Florida at 23 and NFL Europe at 22. And I mean, you know, I thought I was ready. I thought I was, and I acted like I was, but, you know, the reality is that person then and this, you know, 43-year-old are two totally different people, and I get that completely. You got to go through those fires. You got to go through those mistakes. What's one of the biggest mistakes that you made in your coaching career and how you learned from it?
The number one mistake early on, I can tell you, is I tried to learn and then implement it right away. And I was so lucky where I had a very fast-tracked career. When I was a graduate assistant, it was the time at University of North Carolina where, A, we had some freak athletes. You know, we had the second pick and the sixth pick in the draft on the same D-line. Wow. And Julius Peppers and Ryan Sims. So we were able to see some really good athletes. But in that time, I was also in a coaching change. I came in with Bulldog George Smith, and he was strength coach for George Carl Torbush. And then that staff got let go and brought in Jeff Connors, who is still to this day one of my biggest mentors. you know, and John Bunning came in. And so I got to learn two different systems from a football standpoint early on. And then at the time when they had a staff transition, I was able to learn from Greg Gatz, who still is the Olympic director at University of North Carolina. So I got a lot of experience quickly, but I would still say as a young strength coach, not maybe totally understanding the concepts and things along the lines that I learned, whether it be online, social media didn't exist back then, or at a clinic. And I didn't fully understand the principles behind it. I knew it was could help my athletes, but I didn't really understand it. And it's something that I really took a lot from as far as my mistakes early on.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that's when I talk to coaches now, it's not like when we came up and I'm even before that, I can go back to when, you know, you really couldn't even find anything on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
But now you're drinking water through a fire hose, you know. Now it's too much, and especially online and stuff like that. You see all this information. You want to go try these cool things out, but you have to be that principle-based strength coach to where you filter it somehow, some way. And I think that's probably the big takeaway message there is you got to have some sort of filter system, and that's, you know, mentors like Jeff or Greg or whoever. And I think something else that you said there that I really want to pull out is, it's easy to get caught up in the drama of coaching changes and all that. As an assistant, you want to go and you want to pound on the table for your guy and all that. But sometimes as an assistant or as a GA, change is good sometimes because now, you know, you get a chance to learn. And like you said, your second one was one of your biggest mentors in your career, you know? So sometimes just embrace the process and ride the train, because at the end of the day, you don't get in this deal without knowing that there's going to be transition.
Yep.
And, nobody's going to hold you. It doesn't mean, you know, backstab somebody. It just means, you know, ride the train, you know?
Yep.
You went, spent 15 years in college, and then all of a sudden now you find yourself at a smaller Christian high school in Georgia. And you know, I think we can all, you know, probably say, okay, well, that's maybe not where I would have saw Tobias going, you know, in the group. But talk a little bit about that transition from college to high school.
Well, it's funny you say that. I went to the CSC. I had accepted the job in February and worked all the way until, because the way high schools work is it's June to June or July to July. And so, you know, I knew I gave Coach – I was an assistant at ECU, and so I gave Coach Connors a 3 months notice on when I was leaving. So when I went to the CSCCA for the last time, you know, I was telling my friends, yeah, I'm leaving to go to a high school. And they all kind of looked at me funny. But honestly, it's been the best thing for me personally. It's been the best thing for me professionally. My family has really flourished here. The thing that really kind of sparked the move, honestly, was my oldest daughter was struggling academically in school at the time. And, you know, I fall so short of being a good father, and that's probably my biggest regret. I try not to live life with them, but as coaches, we miss a whole bunch. I know you can relate to that. You know, we kind of talked about that a little bit, Nebraska, but you know, I wanted to take better care of my family. And when the Strong Rock opportunity came up, I knew it was a no-brainer. And so I made the decision that, you know, God tells you to be a good steward of what he gives you. And the two most amazing gifts I have are my little girls. And so it was important for me to take care of them. And when this opportunity came, I knew that's where God was leading me. And so it was also an opportunity to come home. I'm from this area, so it was a good chance for me to be around my dad, around my mother-in-law. So it makes it positive in that respect, because I'd literally moved my wife all around the country, like you mentioned, and it was just an opportunity. I thought that, I thought I was going to reinvent the wheel when I made the move, and then I got into it, and I started teaching and coaching, and the amazing thing is the high school realm is completely different than the college situation, and it's been an adjustment, and it's not always easy. But it's something that I truly, truly relish, because I think the impact that a high school strength coach can make is, and I don't want to diminish what the college impact is, because like I said, I still talk, you know, almost 15 years later to some of the kids that I coached. But the impact that the high school age kid you can make, I think, is probably more definitive in a lot of those kids' developments. And it's something that I truly relish.
Yeah, I mentioned this, I think, at that conference that we were at, but, you know, most of the world, they put their best coaches with their youth athletes.
Yep. I remember you saying that.
Opportunity. There's so much opportunity to mess them up for later on down the line, you know, to be honest with you. And that's, to me, that's, I think we need to be, I think it's our number one mission as you know, the different strength and conditioning organizations. I mean, I know you're part of the NHSSCA. That's a great initiative as well. But we need to make our mission as professionals that we're putting a strength coach in every high school in the country. That needs to be the number one mission on growth for our schools. But you alluded to a little bit of the challenges. You know, one is obviously the obvious one is that you're training a multi-sport athlete that's kind of constantly in season.
Yep.
But what are some of the other challenges that maybe people aren't expecting when they go to the high school level?
Wow, we could probably do about 10 podcasts on that. My situation here is unique. My facility is not at my school. We only get 5 minutes to travel between classes. So if we have a 50-minute class, I only have 35 minutes. So time actually training is a very, very demanding situation as far as what you have to be creatively as a strength coach. Dealing with parents, dealing with administrators, dealing with educators. You have to be able to talk the talk. Stealing something from Fred Eves and Ryan Johnson that I have is the vernacular in which you use with certain individuals. You know, you kind of have to play the game, and you have to know I can't be that meathead strength coach to everybody.
Right.
I have to be able to articulate myself to my 65-year-old dean of students who is as straight-laced as it comes, and she could care less about athletics. She's more concerned with our accreditation and SACs and all this other stuff. So, but guess what? She can make my life better or more difficult.
Sure.
You know, with how we schedule stuff. So being able to express what I need from my position is something that has really been, you know, something I've had to learn, because it's being able to relate to different individuals has been a something that, you know, you always do as a strength coach, whether you're talking to the tennis coach or the golf coach, so on and so forth. But people really don't appreciate the fact that at least it's athletics.
Right, yeah.
This is totally, totally, totally. Even in an athletic department, you're talking to the marketing guy or the ticketing guy. Guess what? It's still centered around athletics.
Right.
When you're talking to a dean of students, they don't care about sports.
Right.
And that's reality. They care about what their job is, what they're passionate about, which is the same way for us. So being able to communicate with those individuals is something I've had to acquire a taste for and learn, and is something I continue to work on.
Yeah. Well, remind me if I'm right, but, I mean, when you went to Strong Rock, you were the first strength coach there, right?
They had the guy who was promoted to our head football coach. He was kind of pseudo the strength coach, but it was the – football coach, I just do the weight classes.
Right, right.
Really, when I came in, I'm the first one to develop our program.
Yeah, so I think when you went there to develop a program as opposed to just kind of monitoring a room,
I'm
sure there was lots of challenges that came about from that, where you're having to grab resources when maybe resources weren't there. You're having to get buy-in, you know, from deans of students and things like that. Well, you know, talk a little bit about how you went about walking into a new situation and reaching out to kind of grab the resources needed to develop a program.
Well, the one good thing about being at all those stops is that this was, you know, old hat for me. Yeah. So literally the first thing I did was I walked in the weight room and I rearranged everything. I was going to make that room my own. I was going to take over responsibility of it. I was going to force the position of dictatorship over it, because I was going to take such good care of it, they didn't have a choice but to allow me to do it because they knew it would be the best thing for our school. So that was really something, the number one thing I did. Luckily, from a resource standpoint, we started the Critical Reload program with Shakes and was able to really generate funds over the course of time where we were able to outfit a completely different room from that. So that's been a benefit. I would highly suggest that to any high school strength coach because it really takes care of itself and has been a game changer for us. So those two things I really attacked almost with a bulldog type mentality where I was going to force the fact that they were going to have to give me this room and leave me alone because I was going to do such a great job taking care of it and own it. And I think that's one thing that I've seen from some younger strength coaches is they don't want to necessarily own what they're doing. They kind of just want to rent a little bit. So I really wanted to be, you know, own this program and make everybody see and realize, hey, this is somebody who's legitimately serious about this, and force that from my administration. And honestly, it worked to the point where I remember I sent out a pretty ticked off email about the fact somebody left stuff out, and my principal calls me and says, you know, kind of sheepishly says, "I'm sorry, that was me." You know, you're talking about my boss, like, "Ooh, sorry, I didn't," you know, kind of take a little step back, but he was good with it because he understood why I did that, because I took, you know, such pride in our facility. And it wasn't a great facility at the time. It wasn't bad for a high school, but, you know, we've been lucky enough. And honestly, part of that process was the fact that I showed how important this was, that we had people step up, and we've had some major renovations to our setup here now.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people say that, and I agree with you 100%, but I think what you alluded to at the end there is the number one thing that was the difference, was that when you showed pride in your facility and what you did, that changed the culture of how it was viewed, not necessarily changing the weight room around or whatever it may be. And I think sometimes coaches make that mistake where they just move some things around and then that's it.
Right. You know?
Well, what's mine now? Well, no, the difference is now what's the processes and the systems that you set to maintain that way? What are, you know, being able to not be afraid to call out the principal, you know, and things like that. I think, you know, ultimately when you're trying to gain resources, nobody's going to invest in something that the people don't have pride in.
Right.
Know? And that's why, you know, I think you've been able to, I mean, your facility now is phenomenal. You know, that's why you've been able to get to a spot now to where it's like, man, this is not the back, you know, this isn't the back porch of the school now. This is now the front porch where we want to bring people through.
Oh, yeah.
Show all the great things that we're doing, you know, and that's because they know it's going to be taken care of when it's allocated. You know, you mentioned, we talked a little bit about social media out at the conference, you know, and the power that social media can play. And, you know, obviously, you know, the lower you go in the age demographics, the more social media is a bigger part of their life to some degree. I walked in yesterday and my wife, my girls were all sitting in the living room and they were all on their phones messing around with social media. And I sent them a text saying, "Get the hell off of your phones," as I walked in the door. But talk about how you've used social media in a positive way to kind of build that buy-in into your program.
Oh, it's been awesome. I'll be really honest with you. It's been a great, great tool for us in a couple ways. Not only my focus was to highlight my kids and, you know, because I want to celebrate successes, because I know if I celebrate my kids' successes, they're going to buy in more. There's no doubt there. And I don't want to use the term buy in because I heard Paul Colodi speak at our Northeast region last year, and he said something that was so neat. He said, "I don't want to teach a buy in. I want to teach a belief. Buy in means I'm selling something. I'm a used car salesman. Believe means you believe it in your heart. You believe it in your soul. It's something that's a part of you." So I really wanted to try and develop that belief with our kids. And two, I helped develop the belief with our parents. Parents are, you know, Facebook pretty much dominant The kids are Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram. So I've made it, you know, an intentional purpose of we have a Facebook group, we have a Twitter account. I use my personal Instagram account from time to time with our kids, but it's really been something very intentional because I want to get that belief in our program. And it's been great to see the response from the parents, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter or from the kids on, you know, I had a kid come up to me, "Coach, what do I got to do to get on Twitter?" Hey, you know, I really didn't have an answer for him. But you know, it's that kind of, I'm paying attention. I'm, you know, because what I try and do too is I put out a lot of educational stuff. I use a lot of, I'll put out a lot of nutritional information, a lot of recovery things. I try and put out other schools' information. You know, this is what so-and-so is doing. This is what so-and-so is doing. Maybe to give some reaffirmation to our kids that we're moving in the right direction, because when they hear the same voice all the time, a lot of times it goes in one ear out the other, and that's, you know, high school, college, whatever. So that was really my focus, was to highlight our kids where it really helped. And honestly, I didn't mean for it to, was in two main areas. It helped with my administration. Yeah. I'm sitting in my year end review with a principal and they bring up my Facebook page. How we love it. That's awesome. You know, we're a small private Christian school. Advertising's nice.
Right.
That's a great way for our kids to be highlighted. They loved it. Absolutely loved it. And then secondly, it helped tremendously in fundraising, because I was able to constantly put out, when we had a capital campaign to redo our facilities, this is our plan, this is our vision, this is what it could be, you know. And it was being, you know, tools like that, which are very simple, were tremendously impactful in being able to help our facility renovations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree anymore. I think, you know, I talk all the time about, you know, social media. Early in my career, I hated it. It was something that I really just despised. And to be honest with you, I'm not much more of a fan of it now than I was then. But now I do see the power in it, you know. And it wasn't until I realized how I could use it to better my communication with my athletes or motivation or whatever, did I jump on the bandwagon and start to kind of embrace it. And I think it doesn't have to be something that consumes you. I think that's obviously what happens to a lot of people. They get wrapped up in it and it's this self-promoting or this highlight reel of sorts that you're just kind of constantly getting sucked into everybody else's life. But if you use it as an education tool where you're giving them nutrition tips or highlighting athletes and providing affirmation that way and things like that, it definitely could be a really, really powerful tool in the arsenal. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
The best piece of coaching advice I ever received was, don't worry when I'm yelling at you. You need to worry when I stop yelling at you. I got that from my O-line coach in college as a freshman, Walter Wells, who honestly, pretty much every year before the season starts, I call him and thank him for being a tough you-know-what on me as a idiot freshman in college. But that's truly, honestly, the best piece of advice I've ever gotten.
Agreed. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Honestly, and I told you this at in Nebraska, I loved your book. I so wish it was out when I was young, because it's made me think a lot outside the box with our profession, just in general. And I'll be honest with you, I firmly believe not only is it a great strength and conditioning book, but it's a great business book, because it gives you an open mind to different routes that, let's be honest, is past sets and reps, but is relatable to those individuals who, you know, eat, sleep, and breathe it.
Right. No, I appreciate that. Thanks for saying that. I know you mentioned Jeff's book as well.
Yeah. Coach Connor's book was always something that is easy for me to go back to, because there's so many relatable parts of it. Being that I was on his staff when he wrote it. So, you know, it's pretty
on a notepad.
Pretty good.
On a notepad.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
What about an app and a website?
app, honestly, I use our app is probably the number one app I use is our camera app off my iPad because I shoot it up. I have a great setup here where I have an iPad and Apple TV in a weight room, and I'll shoot the kids' videos up. I'll take the video of them and shoot it up on the screen and say, this is right, this is wrong. Pretty simple, and the kid at the end of the other end of the facility can see it. So that would be the easiest one for me. Website, I try and so many, you know, Elite Fitness, Elite FTS, obviously the NHSSCA, you know, Elite Track, like EliteTrack.com. I think that's a pretty neat one from a speed standpoint to get some ideas from. Vern Gambetta gives a lot to that. So those would kind of be the ones I'd go to.
Good, man. Well, brother, like I said, we got a great chance to get to know each other a little bit better at this last conference, and just I'm really impressed by the things that you're doing and how you've been able to blend, you know, going from, like you said, I think it's two completely different, not professions, but two different jobs. And
oh, yeah.
You've been able to blend that at a, obviously a high level, but more importantly, the motivations behind, you know, why you made the switch to focus on family and to integrate that into your daily, you know, into the profession and the daily job, and then what you're doing to help grow it by being involved with the NHSSCA and being an editor there and all those types of things. I mean, it's stuff that we all should be doing. So I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, man.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.